Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Local experts answering your questions. Call 855-765-1045. That's 855-765-1045. Now, the Consumer Law Hour with Eddie and Chuck Farah.
855-765-1045, the number to call. That'll put you in touch with our legal experts, Eddie Farah and Chuck Farah from the law firm of Farah & Farah, sitting in with us today on 104.5 WOKV in this edition of the Consumer Law Hour. Hey there, Scott Young with you, hanging out. 855-765-1045, and that puts you in touch with the boys. Fellas, how you doing today?
I'm good, Scott. Hanging in there, Scott.
Holding up safe and sound so far.
Happy to have you back in there. Let's take a look outside today. Kind of good an ugly day outside, so it's a great day to be inside listening to the radio and maybe learn something, maybe pick up some useful tips and insider information today.
Yeah, you know, we learned too, Scott, and I'll tell you, we learned something last week. We had that one caller. I was talking about people self-paying their medical bills. And that
and the self-pay costs turn out to be considerably lower in a lot of cases than insured costs.
That was news to me. Everything I've read, that when you self-pay, you pay like 3 or 4 times more. And I was given example after example. And we had a listener who's in the insurance business who called in and said, no, that's not necessarily true. The self-pay pays less than the insurance companies. And I couldn't believe it. So I called him. When I got to work Monday morning, I called him up. I wanted to talk to him because I wanted to see where he was coming from, because it seems to me that if I'm an insurance company and I've got 10,000 patients I can send you that need a hip replacement, I can negotiate a much better deal than if I come off the street and say, I need this one hip replacement, what are you going to charge me? But it has to do with insurance company profits, because I thought, he says, according to his explanation, I really didn't get it all, but I kind of get it. It's all about what they pay out, because a lot of these insurance companies are restricted in terms of their profits in some way, but they get around that by doing that, by paying more. You know, it doesn't sound fair because that drives up, you would think, so they pay more for a procedure, which means you would think that if they had to pay more for a procedure, then that would be less money for the insurance company to keep. That would affect their bottom line. But no, according to the law, the more they pay out, the bigger percentage they're able to keep. So it doesn't make sense, but it's a quirk in the law that allows these insurance companies to make that kind of money. That's why they're not excited about going and negotiating, lower bills for their customers. It doesn't make sense. I don't fully understand it, but he knew what he was talking about, and that was news to me. But the other thing that he told me, what I thought was really interesting, is that his agency, and he's an insurance agent, he sells people these group policies, is that he gets involved when people have these big deductibles. You know, there are some deductibles out there, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. And so what he does as a benefit to his clients, which I think is a great idea, when they're stuck with a $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 bill because of a deductible, he'll go through what was done, and he'll call the hospitals or the doctors and negotiate down those bills. So he says a deductible that may be $5,000 ends up being $2,500. And so he saves his client that $2,500, which I thought was a really nice thing to do. And I mean, that's work on his part, but he probably knows what he can negotiate it down. The typical customer doesn't. I mean, they're like a one-time customer. What do they know? So I wouldn't know what to negotiate it down to, but he knows what they'll accept because he's been dealing with it for so long. And so, boom, he goes in there and he saves his clients money. But this thing about the insurance companies paying out more than they have to pay is really amazing to me. I don't know.
I got to figure they get it back on the back end somehow.
Yes, that's what it is.
It's got to come back around to them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It does. And that's why they do it. Otherwise, they would be hammering these hospitals and doctors to lower the bills to put more money in their pocket. But it doesn't work that way. The more they pay out, the more they make. I don't know. That's how he explained it in the law. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So we, you know, that's the great thing about the Consumer Law Hour. We all learn something.
Yeah, it was definitely a today I learned moment last week.
Yeah. But anyway, let's move on. You know, we, you know, people, you know, we always bring this up about how corporations can do things and get away with it that individuals, you know, probably go to jail for, you know. We've given examples of that, you know, time after time. But we're most recently, you know, I was reading about Avis Rent-A-Car. They had rented a bunch of cars to the U.S. government, okay? I guess they were needed some rentals. And they overcharged the government $10.1 million for rentals. And they and the way they did that is they overcharged them for liability insurance when the insurance was already included in the rental of the vehicle. So they overcharged the government $10.1 million. Somebody found out about it, and all they had to do was pay it back. But again, if an individual, if you, Scott, overcharged the government something when you knew they had paid for it,
they'd lock me up and throw away the room.
We all be in the same boat. I'd be in there with you, you know. But individuals are treated by a different set of standards, as we know. And corporations can do things that individuals could never do. But that's just another example. We've talked about it from the drug industry side. You saw what happened on opioids. And, I mean, what that did to this country and how many people it killed and how they were really pushing these opioids to these doctors to prescribe them. Everybody knows what the devastation was. But, you know, nobody really, people paid fines and people paid some money, but that was the extent of it. Anyway, we could talk about that all day long, and everybody, I'm sure, there's example after example, but that's the way it is. But anyway, moving on, we've talked about this before, and I like to mention it periodically because, you know, I went to a friend's house last week. He has a really old vehicle, and it's a 70s model, and the tires that he has on him, because he doesn't drive the car that much. So I asked him, well, how old are the tires? He goes, man, only put 5,000 miles a year on the tire on this car, and these tires are 12, 13 years old. And then I said, well, yeah, but so what? He goes, well, look at the tread. The tread's really good on this car. But, you know, it's not about the tread.
It's about the age of the rubber, because that stuff dry rots. It ages out.
Exactly. Tires, you should not keep a spare or a tire more than 10. Between 6 to 10 years, it's time for those things to be changed out, regardless of what the tread wear is like. Because the oxygen exposure causes tread belt separation. It causes degradation. It's a rubber. It disintegrates over time. And so do not look at the tread. What you want to look at is the DOT number. And there are four numbers that make up the DOT number. For instance, if the DOT number is 3109, that means that tire was manufactured in the 31st week of 2009. That's the only thing you need to look at. So if you're buying a used tire or even a new tire, because, I mean, if you get a tire that's, you know, brand new from a tire store that's 5 years old, I mean, that tire's probably got 1 year left on it. So you want to look at the DOT number of every tire that you purchase so you can determine when that tire was manufactured. And because I tell you, some of the worst accidents we've seen in our office are tire separation accidents, because there's no good outcome on that. Either the car is flipped, you lose control, either run into a light pole or a tree, or it's never a good result. Tire separations cause all kind of problems, big time problems. So that's that on that. But the other thing is we talk about slips and falls. We handle a lot of slip and fall case accidents in our office. And with the way the law works, Scott, on this is that when you enter a place of business, you have a certain status, okay? Because you're an invitee. Some people, businesses want you to come to their place of business. If you're at a big box store, Home Depot, Walmart, they want you to come in. So your classification, your status in that particular business determines what duty they owe you. Okay, for instance, if you walk into a place of business, you're considered an invitee. They want you there, and they owe you a higher standard of care. They have a duty to maintain their set premises in a safe condition. That's what they're required to do, because they want you to come in there and spend your money. So they've got certain duties. When somebody comes to your house, okay, they're there at your invitation. You want them there, and you owe a certain duty to that person who comes to your home. But when you're a trespasser, it's a different duty, okay? Florida, I mean, people think, oh, I don't, and if, even if a person is a trespasser, even if they are, there is still a duty owed to a trespasser. It's not a high duty, but it's still a duty. And in Florida, the duty owed to a trespasser is that once they're aware of the trespasser's presence, the only duty owed to a trespasser is to refrain from willfully and wantonly injuring the trespasser. What that means is, I'll give you an example, is that if you know trespassers are coming onto your property and you've got some sort of trap there or some sort of device that could injure someone, and you know they're coming onto your property and that device injures them, you could still be responsible to that trespasser for your injuries, okay? Because you're aware of it. You're aware that they might not see this trap. It's a hidden trap. You know they're coming onto the property, and they could be injured by it. You would have some liability there. There's a case recently where this person who was a trespasser at a Greyhound bus station, he wasn't supposed to be there. He was a trespasser. He wasn't allowed to be there. And what had happened is that there was a drive-by shooting at the Greyhound bus station. This guy was shot and killed. Well, this person's a trespasser. Regardless of that, they were able to maintain a claim against the Greyhound bus station because Greyhound knew that people were coming onto their property that weren't supposed to be there, and they were aware of a lot of criminal activity around the bus station. They could have done something to prevent that, but they did not. So that case was allowed to proceed, even though this person was a trespasser. So your status as a trespasser does not give the landlord a green light in terms of what their liability is. So, okay.
But here's the thing in that situation, regardless of liability and otherwise, if he's trespassing and he still gets shot, the dude's just having a bad day.
Yeah.
His number was up. We got to take a quick break. We've got a couple of callers on the line, so we're going to come back to those when we return on the Consumer Law Hour here on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. 855-765-1045, the number to call, 855-765-1045. That puts you in touch with our consumer law experts, Eddie Farah and Chuck Farah from the law firm of Farah & Farah, standing by. We've got YL in Oceanway. He's got a question about the fraudulent use of credit cards. YL, you're on the Consumer Law Hour.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you?
Hey, YL.
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking my call. So we have a situation where a debit card was used in someone's app for ordering the food deliveries amounting to about $2,000 because, you know, it's been going on for 6 months or so. So, and we read the company's rules about how to get information, you know, for them to release the information who was doing it. And what they're saying is we need to get a subpoena. So I was thinking we get a subpoena if we sue them, but we don't know who to sue. So can you give us guidance on how to proceed with this?
Yeah. I mean, was it your credit card?
It was my wife's.
Okay.
Debit
and
card.
Did they reverse the charges?
Some of it. It was reversed by the delivery company, and then some of it was recredited back by the bank.
Okay, were you out of pocket?
Did
you lose any money?
4 or 6 months. Yes, but no, we got it back.
Yeah. So here's my, that's why the reason I'm asking that is, what are your damages? What would you sue for? It didn't cost you.
That's what I was thinking too. That's my other question is that, you know, I was telling my wife if you got the money back, you got to show damage. And the other only damage we can think of is the aggravation.
Yes. But that's not going
to not having it. The money and not being able to use it, and you know, we almost had a fight because she thought it was I that was doing it and all of that commotion.
Well, she thought you were
doing
it.
The time that we spent getting it back, you know.
She thought you were spending the money?
No, she thought it was I that was using it.
Oh, you were using her card.
Yeah, she thought.
Okay, well.
But it wasn't I, so we finally was able to find out that it was someone put her card in their app.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was...
Put her card number in their app, and been ordering, you know, every other day.
So it was
from restaurants here and there.
Yeah, they were using it like it was theirs.
Yes, and they were using it, just, you know, having a ball with it, because it's not their card.
Yeah, well, the thing is...
In that situation, you know, you would sue... Who would you sue? You were trying to sue the consumer. I mean, if there were damages, who would you sue in that situation?
Well, the person who charged it. But the thing about it is, he didn't lose any money. The person who's out of the money is the bank and the credit card company.
Right.
That who has the right to sue the person. They're going to try to find out who it is and go after them and probably put them in jail if they can. I mean, they're not.
Well, we're thinking at least trying to find out who did it, but I don't know what would be a justifiable way to get a subpoena.
But how are you gonna? Well, you can't.
The way,
you gotta,
the way you would do
there's
it.
No way. You have to sue the insurance company, sue the credit card company, and ask them to divulge the name to you.
It's a fight that's not worth fighting, you're not going to get anything out of it that's going to satisfy you.
Yeah. What are you going to spend all that money to go sue the credit card company just to get the name of somebody who is going to say, you know, you're going to. They could be in Russia somewhere. I mean,
well, we think it's someone that worked with her.
Okay. I mean, you could file something like a petition for discovery against the delivery company, because
yes, that's what I was hoping.
It wouldn't be like a lawsuit. It would just be a petition you file in court to find out who, you know, who is this person who was actually making these fraudulent charges,
or at least where were they delivering it to and billing you for it?
Well, why don't you just, if you think you know who it is, you got to be careful, because you don't want to slander somebody by accusing them of being a thief. You know, you could go to the employer and say, we think this person did this. You know, I mean, tell the bank or the credit card company, we think we know who did it, and maybe they can figure it out. But you got to be careful about that, because, you know, you don't want to go to her boss and tell her that. But if you think the person works with you and you know who they are, why don't you tell the credit card company that?
Yeah, but you know.
There were more than two or so possibilities on who.
Well, you can give them both names.
Done it.
You can give them both names.
I was wondering about what was said earlier about discovery. What is that again?
It's called a petition for discovery, and you'd file it in court to allow you to subpoena their records. It would allow you to subpoena the records from the delivery company to find out who the person is.
Yeah.
And you're not filing a lawsuit against the delivery company. It's just a petition just to
get the names.
Yeah, to serve the
get
subpoena.
The names. Is there like a form we would...
You have to get a lawyer to do it for you. It's going to cost you some money. I mean, you have to get a lawyer.
That's what I tell her. Just
unless a small claims would help you with that.
And this is not the type of lawsuit that where a lawyer would handle it, like on a contingency, where he would just do it. He'd wait to get paid. They're going to want money up front. It's not going to work. I mean, it's not practical for you to do that. As long as you've been reimbursed by the credit card company and the bank, and you're not out of pocket, you know.
There's the thing about that too, because the dispute is, they said it's a provisional credit. So we're hoping that in a few more days, you know, they don't reverse the credits that's been given to us. So we filed the police report and gave them copies just to make sure our situation is become, you know, their ruling becomes more favorable.
Stupid question time, but have you already closed that account and gotten a new account set up and new cards and everything?
Not the card, we changed it, but not the account.
I would talk to the bank about maybe transferring over to a whole different account number just in case, so that that way you've eliminated any additional connection to your previous money there.
I mean, it is a criminal act. Well, maybe the police department would be able to find out through their powers.
Okay, it's officer about pursuing this from the criminal.
Yeah, I know. And they may be able to find out because they have other avenues to discover this. And
yeah, they
can
probably find out.
Does.
But the thing is, if it's a provisional credit, they want to make sure that you're not trying to scam them. They're trying to say, oh, you made the charges, and now you're trying to say you didn't make the charges. And there are people that do that.
I don't know if there's a way.
I'm sure there are people that do that. Oh, these charges on my credit card are fraudulent, you know, and they made the they want to get them reversed, but they really made the charge. That's what they're going to investigate, to make sure you didn't make those charges.
And that's why I'm saying just go ahead and close out that account altogether so that it eliminates any possible additional activity on it.
Oh, okay. Appreciate that. So how do we, what do we say to an officer? Is there a particular kind of officer that we approach about that, or how do we?
But you filed a police report.
Yeah.
He said he filed a police report.
Yeah. But
you have a case number.
Go push him on it. And make.
Well, you had a case number. Now you can try to call the state attorney and find out what the status of the investigation is.
Oh, so just ask them how it could be investigated.
Well, if you filed a police report, there should be a police investigation number. But the problem's going to be the police have limited resources, and when they're looking for robbers or murderers. I mean, this is like low on the scale of importance.
Their priority, yes.
You know, they're figuring it's a civil matter.
They're going to look at it and they're going to say, you know, oh, did you get your money back? Then the problem's solved, and they're going to move on.
Unless it's a wide scale thing where maybe it's a ring or some sort of criminal enterprise where, you know, they got the same person doing it. I just don't know if they have the resources to spend going after one guy charging $2,000 on a credit card.
Maybe the discovery thing is the most likely.
Huh?
Maybe the discovery approach would be the better approach to see.
That's the civil side, but then you also have through the police department the criminal side that you can pursue.
Okay.
I mean, you know, the civil side would be the petition for discovery if you wanted to sue the person. You'd discover through that means.
What would you estimate the cost would be for if we hire an attorney to file something like that for us?
It costs some money. The filing fee alone is probably $300 just to file it. An attorney's going to probably charge you two or three, because he's got to file the petition. He's got to probably give them notice. He's got to go to a hearing. This is a $3,000 deal.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just trying. I know attorneys will do it for you. I mean, but they're going to charge you. I mean, not like we work on a contingency. We don't handle we don't charge people up front for our cases. But we don't handle.
Yeah,
that
but
type
this is
case.
Different.
Yeah, this is not a personal injury matter. But we do other stuff on a contingency, like lemon law cases and Social Security workers' comp too. But this case is not a case where an attorney is going to handle it on a contingency.
And there's nothing like you can just look it up somewhere and do it yourself kind of deal.
I don't think so. I think it's too much involved. I think there's too much because you got to get the other. You could, I mean,
maybe small claims can help you with that.
Yeah, maybe you could call a lawyer and say, "Listen, walk me through it. I'll pay you a little bit of money to draw up the paperwork. Tell me what to do." That type of thing.
Oh, okay. See if there's a lawyer that would be willing to do it.
Yeah,
that part.
That way, like, I'll pay you $500. Can you walk me through it? Tell me what to do.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, but it's interesting.
Thank you, guys.
I can see what you say. If it's somebody at work that's been doing it, that's a big deal. You know, your employer should know about it.
Yeah, and then we don't know who's the particular person. We think we have an idea, but it's like two or three people that we
if you filed a police report, you could tell the police officer, "Here's who I think did it," and they can go interview him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, tell the police, here's who I think is involved, and they can go interview the person.
Well, appreciate your show, guys.
Yeah, man,
thank you for your time.
All right,
we appreciate the call, Lyle.
Thank you.
Bill, I see you still sitting on the line over there. I appreciate your patience, and we're going to be with you as soon as we can. So I just need you to stick around for a little while longer. We've got to take a quick break here on the Consumer Law Hour on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. Jacksonville. We are back on the Consumer Law Hour. 855-765-1045, the number to call. 855-765-1045. That puts you in touch with our legal experts, Eddie Farah and Chuck Farah from the law firm of Farah and Farah. Bill has been waiting patiently on the line. Bill, you are on the Consumer Law Hour.
Yes.
Hey, Bill.
Yes.
Talk to us, man.
Yes. Hello.
Yeah,
hey, Bill.
How can we help you?
Yeah, this will be a short question. Yeah, I got a neighbor. I have a tree on my lot, on my property, and some of the bigger limbs are hanging over the fence on his property, and he wanted to know if he could come over and cut the limbs. I said, I don't have a problem with that, but what I'm concerned about is I know when I have shingles done, I always make sure everybody has workman's comp. Now, I just need to know what is – am I liable if he's on my property using his chainsaw and, say, he cuts off a finger?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. He's an independent contractor.
No, he's not. No, he's just a neighbor.
Yeah, I know that, but he's considered an independent contractor. If you're controlling there could be some liability if you're controlling the way he's doing his job. If you say, come on over – and you're just not involved in him, just he's just chopping down the limbs, unless you know of some dangerous condition. Let's say you're, this is an example. We talked about it at the beginning of the show. Let's say you're aware that near that tree, there's like a hole that's covered up that you can't see, and he falls, he stumbles in that hole, he cuts off his finger. Yeah, you could have some responsibility for that because you're aware of a dangerous condition. You don't let him know about it. But and as long as you're not controlling the way he's doing his job, and as long as you warn him of any unknown dangers that are in that area that could affect him, you won't have any liability. But the example I gave you could result in some liability.
With me telling him, okay, you can only cut these three branches. Am I now controlling it?
Well, I mean, tell him, listen, you're allowed to cut only the three branches. I think
you'll be okay.
You're okay with that. It's how he does his job. You know, if you're directing him and say, well, you got to use this ladder, or you can only walk up two steps, I want you to do this and turn on your... And if you're controlling the way he's doing his job, that's where you're going to find some liability if something happens.
Okay.
But if you're saying, yeah, you're an independent... It's like when I hire my... If you have a yard man, you know, you pay him so much each month to come cut your grass. You're not controlling the way he cuts. He comes and cuts his grass, he leaves. If he hurts himself, you're really not responsible. Only if there's a hidden danger that you're aware of, that you don't make him aware of, or you're controlling the way he's doing his job, then you can have some liability, okay?
Okay. I was just wondering if he had a notarized statement that saying he would not hold me accountable if anything was to happen while on my property. I wonder if that would
help.
Hold
yeah,
up.
That would help.
Solves the problem.
That would help. But let me tell you, sometimes these agreements are not worth the paper they're written on. Because people can allege fraud and misrepresentation. And, you know, but it's good. It helps. You know, everything helps. But just because something's in writing doesn't mean that it takes care of the entire situation.
It's like a contract. Yeah. I would include the other. Like, you're allowed to come onto my property to cut off these two branches.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not controlling it. I'm not controlling how you do it.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of any conditions that would cause any injury to you. You know, let's say he cuts a branch and a branch falls on his head and pushes him to the ground and the saw cuts off his arm. I mean, that's his responsibility. I mean, things like that have happened. He doesn't know what he's doing. He could cause some problems.
I don't foresee anything happening, but, you know, sometimes even though he's a neighbor, but not a neighbor we go out to dinner with or anything.
Oh, I know.
But,
yeah.
You know, sometimes people cut their arm off and go, oh, well, I think I can sue you now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you try to be a good neighbor, then they turn it on you.
Oh, yeah.
So.
When it comes to the money, I mean, that neighbor word doesn't hold up much.
I know. All right.
But if you have homeowners insurance, if you got homeowners coverage, that your homeowners insurance company should come to your defense in a situation like that.
Right.
That's why you have homeowners.
Right. Okay. All right. Hey, I appreciate it, and I won't draw this out any longer.
Yeah, no problem. You know, you can go online and find those releases and print them out for free. They're out there. Just go online and say, release of liability form. You can find them.
I'll look it up.
And then let him sign it.
Hey, we appreciate your call today, Bill.
Hey, thanks a lot. Have a good day. Bye.
Yeah, we've seen many.
Yeah, your homeowners, you know, the homeowners provide you coverage for that.
When you're dealing with a saw,
So I was juggling my chainsaw and I cut my leg off, and it's your fault.
Well, you know, if you if there's a trap, or maybe there's, I was aware of, maybe it's on a deck. I don't know. I'm just giving you an example. Maybe there's a deck there where and you're standing on a deck trying to cut the limb, and I know the deck's rotten, and that, you know, I should have, I was going to replace, but I never got around to replacing it. He falls through the deck. The saw goes with him. The saw, does something. There's all kind, there's some responsibility there. I mean, that'd be a viable claim, I think,
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, every case rests on the facts. I mean, there's no law. The law is not black and white. I mean, you have to look at every case is facts specific.
Well, of course, and in that sort of a circumstance, if you're aware of a particular risk or something like that, you've got a duty to inform your guest or whoever's trying to do something of the potential risk on
even
that.
In a trespasser situation. If a trespasser, we talked about that at the beginning of the show. Even a trespasser has some rights. They don't have the same rights like a customer does at a big box store, but they have some rights. There are some things that you're responsible for as a land or as a control. When you control the premises, even though that person's a trespasser, you have some responsibility to that person.
The law is not black and white. Yeah. You're right. That's why there are lawyers.
I mean, I was going to get in. Yeah, that's right. And, the cases are, they rest on their facts. That's why people you can find two fact scenarios that you think are similar, and you got two different results. I was going to talk about that today, as a matter of fact. We don't have time to get into it. I was going to talk about the McDonald's coffee case, which we all heard about, and another recent case, where there are two completely different results. You thought the facts were the same, but they're not. One little facts change can make a completely different outcome in the way the courts interpret it. But anyway, if we have time, we'll get into that because that may take a few minutes.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll take a quick break here then, and we'll come back and we'll wrap up our final segment of the Consumer Law Hour. If you've still got questions, now's the time to jump in. 855-765-1045. And get a chance to talk to our legal experts, bounce off any questions that you might have. And they are standing by again, 855-765-1045, as the Consumer Law Hour continues on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. Jacksonville, we're back on the Consumer Law Hour, 855-765-1045, 855-765-1045, the number to call. If you've got questions, our legal experts are standing by. Eddie, you were talking about the hot coffee incident.
I love we have time to get into all that because I was going to break that case down for you.
All right, well, we can talk about that next week then.
I'll jump on it next week. Do we have any callers right now?
I got nobody on the line at the moment, which prompts a shift in topical deals.
Minshew
or Lawrence?
We'll both find out tonight. When we're at the game, we'll figure it out. I mean, listen, probably Minshew to start off with, I think. I don't know.
Listen, I mean, it's a good situation to be in.
Minshew's,
isn't it, though?
Minshew's
really
a good
is.
Backup. If you call him a backup, he's good.
If nothing else between the two of them, we know Trevor Lawrence is bringing all kinds of physical ability and resource to the game. And certainly nobody's disputing Gardner Minshew's physical attributes as well. But Minshew brings such character and personality. And I'm looking forward to him still being large and in charge over there.
Yeah, that's the ultimate result. But, it's going to be fun going to the games this year. After, I went last year. I went to like 6 out of the 8 home games, I think. I was there, and it was not fun, Scott. There was nobody there. It was it was depressing. But this year, we're looking forward to being in the stadium, cheering on the Jags. I like the vibe that's going around the city. And I'll tell you, Mac Jones did a decent job. That Bowles quarterback, watched him Thursday night. He's a local guy. He's doing really well. So,
yeah, he looked good.
He looked good.
From the Bowles school.
Yeah.
It's been a good opportunity of recent for some area athletes to shine because we had a couple of swimmers from Duval area who have performed well for us in the Olympics.
And the decathlete, too.
He didn't get anything.
Well, he got there.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I watch that, and I think about just laying down and dying after the third part.
Oh, man, I get tired just watching it. I couldn't even. I had to take a break just watching it. But anyway, yeah, that was good. Watching those Olympics, we really got into that. I really enjoyed all the oddball stuff, the skateboarding and the, you know, and the BMX bikes and that's.
Half pipe in the Olympics. Who'd have saw that coming?
I tell you, man, I saw that one guy on the BMX. He was up in the air. He leaves the bike, flips the bike, you know, 360, then lands back on the bike and goes down. That was something I just couldn't believe.
My favorite story about the Olympics is about the guy who put the sumo wrestler statue out on the equestrian track, and it scared the horses so they wouldn't jump.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. But, yeah, so anyway, yeah, we'll hopefully, yeah, we'll be talking Jags as the season goes on, Scott. Don't worry about that. I'll report back.
All right, I'm looking forward to.
We're a sponsor. If I get any inside information, I'll be the first to let you know about it.
Looking forward to any kind of insider information on that.
Yep.
In the meantime, fellas, we've reached the end of another edition of the Consumer Law Hour, and I'd like to thank all of our callers, as always, and thank you guys for your continued sponsorship. Looking forward to seeing you again next week in Consumer Law Hour every Saturday at noon here on 104.5 WOKV, brought to you by our friends and sponsors, Chuck and Eddie Farah from the law firm of Farah & Farah. Looking forward to seeing you again, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.